Well, good afternoon, everyone. I think I know every face that's here, so that's good to start on familiar ground. What I'm going to try to do today is stick to my outline, because I usually give this seminar. It takes me 4 hours, so I'm condensing 4 hours in 20 minutes. So 1, 2, 3, here I go. Okay. So when you see stories like these, what do you think of? What comes to your mind? High unemployment rates. What do you think of? When the unemployment rate in any country creeps above 7%, it's a time for crisis. It takes years and years to recover from high unemployment rates. It affects your whole life. It affects the divorce rate goes up. Incidence of illness go up. Happiness goes down. There's an economist in Johns Hopkins University, Steve Hank, and what he does is every year he puts out an annual misery index. It's an annual misery index that ranks the world's saddest and happiest countries. And one of the primary predictors of misery is the unemployment rate. So if it's anything about 7%, it is an indication that that particular country is, that particular country has an economic crisis as well. So we all are in panic mode when unemployment creeps over 7%. Yet we are not shaken at all when the uninvolvement rate of the average church is at 80%. The higher the rate of uninvolvement, I'm not talking lapsed members, I'm not talking about deaths, I'm talking about uninvolvement. The greater the loss of members, the higher the rate of uninvolvement, the greater the loss of members. In the average church, only 20% of worshipers are active. These are people who volunteer, who have church office, who keep things running. And the other 80%, what do? They keep our pews warm. They check in on Sabbath morning just so that everybody sees I'm there. There's my boss, he sees I'm there. There's my best friend, she sees I'm here. I've gotten my day's blessings, I'm off to face the week. And so they check in on Sabbath morning and they check out during the rest of the week. So the question for us today is, shouldn't we view the 80% of uninvolvement in our local churches as a crisis? Those who leave the church are rarely from that 20% group. They are from the 80% who are not involved. So keep in mind that the average church, only 20% are active participants and ambassadors of their faith. The rest are just attendees. Now, service can be a catalyst for discipleship, nurture, and retention. And it makes service is what makes the difference between the 20% and the 80%. When people are involved in service, it's found that they stick around in church. They give more, higher rates of offering. They serve more. They grow spiritually stronger. So if that's all it takes, getting people involved in service to get all these benefits, perhaps we should be more intentional in offering people opportunities to serve. But not just any kind of service. This is not salvation by works or service for the sake of doing good deeds. This is the type of service that's connected to three things: relationships with one another within the church, relationships with the community outside of the church, and a spiritual nurturing environment within the church. So this is the type of service that we need, because the measure of a church is not in the attendance on Sabbath, but in the transformational effect that each person sitting there has on their community. So to illustrate this more, let's first look at service in a missional context. When you do service like this, as intertwined in an act of sharing your faith that's connected to relationships with those you worship with, relationships with your neighbors, service in this missional context is very different. And Jesus made it clear that our ability to love well and to cultivate real relationships are what identify us as his disciples. So this kind of service in a missional context is rendered within or towards a relationship. So let me quickly explain. If I'm in the habit of every Thursday going to a soup kitchen with my church members and serving soup, okay? So I'm behind the counter, I have a ladle, a pot of soup, and I give soup to this guy I see almost every week. He smiles, I smile at him, I say, you know, have a nice day, and he's gone. Every week I see him, I serve him soup. There is an act of service, but is it within any relationship I have with this man? No. Is it moving towards a relationship? Maybe, but I doubt it. But let's see another way of me being in that same soup kitchen, serving soup to that same man. I have made friends with my neighbor, and I'll take my neighbor as an example. She is not a churchgoer, but she's a very good person. She loves to serve. She believes in a lifestyle of service. So I said, hey, Pat, I go Thursdays. You're retired now. Do you want to hang out with me for 45 minutes in the soup kitchen? She's probably going to say yes, because she likes to do good things in the community. So she comes with me side by side. We serve soup to the same man. We are talking, getting to know each other better. A relationship is established between me and Pat, my neighbor. Which relationship is going to give me an opportunity to share my faith? It's with a friend. So service in a missional context is always within a relationship, or it's moving towards a relationship. Service in a missional context always fulfills a need or a dream. You fulfill a need in a community, you're appreciated. You fulfill a dream in a community, you're never forgotten. So when you're a church, if you say, okay, I'm going to give backpacks every school year, great, you fulfill a dream, you fulfill a need. But if you fulfill a dream, say the community wants to build an after-school program, and you harness the human resources in your committee, and you spearhead that and start something that the school system had no way to begin, that's fulfilling a dream. And when you serve, it's with regularity. Don't give soup to a guy this Thursday and then next Thursday say, it's snowing, you know. Be regular, no matter what the service is. And it happens in a neutral, comfortable, open environment. When you have your service-focused project within your church doors, within your walls, it can be very intimidating to your community. So take it to a neutral environment. Oftentimes, a home, a church, the workplace, these are not comfortable, neutral environments. If I can't remember the book right now, but it's a book written by the founder of Starbucks, and the principle on which he created Starbucks. It was based on this, that people have pressures at home, they have pressures at work, they need a central, neutral place to just hang out, just to be accepted for who they are, just to sit down and have a cup of coffee, and no one bothers me to leave this place. I can sit here for as long as I want. It's those neutral third places that, did I lose it again? Those neutral third places that we need and where we perform services. And to quickly explain what it means to be a community-focused church. So look at the community as one circle, okay? Here we see the needs and the dreams of the community. Next, we have the another circle, and this is us. It's the calling and the capacity of the church. And third, we have the mandates and desires of God, okay? This is just loose for some reason. So, no? Okay, I'm going to keep talking. Let's see if we can fix this. So, we have community, we have church, and we have God, okay? Now, let me just one more time, maybe re-plug it in. There it is. I see it here, but not there. Whoops, there it is. I will try not to move near it. Okay. So, now these three circles are connected in very specific ways. For example, there's salvation that connects the church who have accepted God and his gift of salvation. So that's the glue that holds these two circles together. There's grace here. God offers free grace. He says, here, take it. It's available for all the community. To show his love and grace, he has rain fall on all of them. He has forgiveness for all, regardless if they are a believer or not. He gives them shelter, food, love, friendships. It's grace. It's there. It's what connects. But yet, it's sort of a one-way connection, if you can see what I mean. God is there offering grace, but people in the community have to always step out and accept it. And then, church and community, they're connected in some ways. They're part of it. They pay taxes or not pay taxes. Their property is in the community, real estate taxes. They belong in a roster of businesses. They're in the yellow pages. They're if you search online under the community for churches, you'll find the church. But there are limits. There are laws. There are governmental limits. There are ethical limits. There are all kinds of limits that don't always allow community and the church to work together. But there is that little circle in the middle that brings all of them together, regardless of one's faith, regardless of one's circle, regardless of one's ethnicity, regardless of language, regardless of anything. Even an atheist would admit that a lifestyle of service is a good one with benefits to society, correct? And if you'd like to know more about this principle, it's adapted from the book, The Externally Focused Church, that I read at least once a year. It is an amazing book for churches who want to adopt this lifestyle. Now, this was something I had always known, but I didn't really understand how to implement it. And this is where my experience in the chamber came to be. For reasons I could not understand at that time, God took me out of denominational employment for about 2.5, 3 years, something like that, and placed me in this large chamber of commerce, one of the largest ones in the country. And it was a giddy ride, I'm telling you. It was a power trip, if you're into power trips. It's a giddy ride of politics and businesses. And one of my responsibilities was to plan events. Everything from the 4th of July fireworks, you know, that you have in a town, to planning a monthly formal luncheon. By the way, firework costs, when I did this back in 2010, for every minute of firework, it's $1,000. I mean, just a trivial detail, that's all. That's how much it costs. So when you see 20 minutes of fireworks, you know it's $20,000, but that's aside. Okay, so my first week there, my boss hands, it was just before the next monthly formal luncheon. And this formal luncheon was like 300 businessmen, top businesses of the town would attend. So he hands me this file and he says, okay, you take over And I'm looking, I have no idea, you know, and I don't know, red wine goes with what, white wine goes, have no clue. I am totally clueless. I don't know my red meat from a white meat. You're talking to a third generation vegetarian Adventist. And I'm in this world that I know nothing about. So he hands me the file and he's rattling all these things. And then he says, okay, all you have to remember is the sponsor of the event. So I learned quickly that companies pay thousands of dollars to come and spend one lunch once a month to listen to a guest speaker. I can't understand it, but that's what they do. They pay for a table. And then another sponsor spends even more money to have the chance to display their name up front for 1 hour and choose a guest speaker. So this was the kind of world. And he's rattling off this, that, and the other. And then he said, Miss So-and-so is a sponsor of this year, of this next event. And Mr. La-Di-Da of Google is the speaker. I said, come again? And I thought, maybe I heard wrong, you know? Maybe there's a small company called Oogle or Boogle, and I heard Google. But no, it was Google. And the Miss So-and-so was this woman who owned every NBC tower, station, and studio between Redding, California, and Portland, Oregon. And I was absolutely dumbstruck. But I'm not telling you all this to impress you, because believe me, there are far more embarrassing stories of me during that 2.5, 3 years doing stupid things because I didn't know my way around that kind of a world. So no, it's not to impress you. But from that moment till the day I left the chamber, I quickly learned the power of influence, networking, and relationships that come simply out of service. The power of influence, networking, and relationships that come out of service. You do nothing else but show up and serve when there is a need. Now, the way this worked is that everyone could be a member of the chamber. So we had, for example, this Miss So-and-so who owned all this. And then there was a photographer who couldn't take a photograph. I'm telling you, I'm terrible. He was terrible. But he would be there flashing his camera. But he was an independent freelance photographer, happy to be doing what he did. So there were all kinds of people. But on that list of membership were churches. And these churches used this opportunity to not only influence the community, but to get a solid recognition of a church that served because of their faith. They showed up every time. So what I'm going to share with you real quickly in the last 10 minutes is lessons I learned from watching these churches. By the way, where I lived, within 35 miles, there were 5 Adventist churches. How many churches do you think were members of this Chamber of Commerce? Zero. That is correct. Zero. An easy way to connect to the community. And the Adventist churches weren't there. But I'm happy to say I now belong to Ellicott City Church. When our new pastor came in, one of the first things I told him was my vision. I wanted to see every Adventist church part of their local Chamber of Commerce, the Lions Club, the Rotary Club. If you're a member, join. If you're an entity, be part of a network like this. And, you know, I thought, like most pastors, he was not listening to me. He was just nodding and smiling. A couple of weeks later, at church, he talked about his experience as part of the Chamber of Commerce. I noticed that NAD, in their new offices, they moved to Howard County. They are members of the Chamber of Commerce. So I hope more and more get that. And I really speak fast. Oh, my. Okay. And one thing that they learn is that they practice is that the community is an extension of themselves. They don't use phrases like outsiders, non-church members. They are all community. They're a part of them, okay? And they meet people where they are. They don't say pass pamphlets and say, come find Jesus in our church. Come find free clothes in our church. Come find children's programs in our church. No. They look at their inventory of programs, Pathfinders. Oh, we can turn this into a boys and girls club in the middle of town. Oh, Sabbath school. Why have VBS in our church? Let's move it to the center of town. They show up and they make friends. Whether it's a small to-do in the morning or if it's that monthly fancy hoo-hoo luncheon, they're there. They're simple church people, but they have representatives, either the church leader or the church member, somebody. They are there. They are active. They come early. They set up chairs. They're the last to leave. They come. They make friends. They know everyone's name, their children. They're worse than my mother. They ask questions of everyone and make friends. Secondly, they get connected through service. A real quick story. They're very organized about it. How much more time do I have? 10 minutes, is it?
Time is out.
Time is out. Oh, dear. Okay, time is out. Anyway, what I will do for all of you is I'm going to write this all up. It's already there, and we have posted online. Ideas of how they connected with their community. If I can have 30 seconds, I'll tell a quick story how the Chamber of Commerce, these churches, one of the things these towns did was they used to focus kids in high schools who got 4-point GPA. So, and then they would, from that group, they would focus on some stories. And one day, one year, the story was that this girl who got 4.0, one of the students, she was a homeless girl who lived under Highway 5, going from California to Oregon. And that's where she lived. And suddenly, the town knew. It was almost as if the first paper that dropped there by the Salvation Army Church, they picked it up, they saw it. By the end of the day, they had reached out into their network. They got the girl a car, a used car. They got her scholarship for her for college. They got her a place to stay. They got her a mentor, everything. They didn't do it by themselves, but because they were so infiltrated in their community. And I will write out everything else and post it online. I have some suggestions that if you're interested in how you could implement service in your churches.